What is good, everybody? Welcome to another Gold Standard podcast. I'm Rob Stats Guerrera alongside Vish Kumaran. It is Monday, August 3rd. This is Under Review, the show where when they play games, we go drive by drive and play by play to break everything down. We're getting to that point, Vish, just not quite there yet. The question is, which 49ers are going to be with us when we do?
I was kind of blown away by the way you started this show. That was very poetic by you. And then you went right to, well, the sad news of, yeah, the Niners seem to get injured every practice in a way that's like almost depressing at this point, Rob. It's like not even something like I can joke about like as a fan. Like people ask me at work, friends ask me, like, every practice, it's a new guy that we've talked about is important to this team and in an integral part of this team. And it's like they can't even have a proper practice. It's like they can't have a practice and then get a little bit better from that practice because a few guys get hurt and they got to reshuffle and they got to reshuffle reps. And there's a lot of things that get out of rhythm.
It's very, very frustrating because it seems like they literally cannot do football activities without losing somebody. When I woke up this morning, there was a baker's dozen worth of injuries for the 49ers, including six defensive linemen, which didn't include Mykal Williams or Nick Bosa. So that tells you the cluster injuries that they have had. Now, they're maintaining that some of them, like Mike Evans' quad strain, is minor. We'll see. Their top four draft picks this year are all injured to some degree, which is like, it is wild. You know, we sit here and we talk about the 49ers haven't been able to find their sort of next generation of stars. Part of the reason is because they're always damn hurt.
I totally get, I'm not going to harp on the Mike Evans injury in the sense that, like, you're right on. It does feel minor. He's probably going to come back. It's not like a thing that can affect them long term, but it's a different perspective on it. This is the absolute professional. This is not a guy who shows up in training camp and gets hurt 3 days into training camp. He shows up in the kind of shape that he's able to make it through an offseason and then the season. Like, I know people talked about his hamstring last year. Look at Mike Evans' availability throughout his career prior to that. This is a highly professional player. He shows up in a level of shape that, I mean, an injury like a quad strain early in camp, that's not something we've necessarily seen this guy deal with, especially when you talk about the kind of work and shape this guy puts himself in the offseason. There's something, Rob. There's something here. And I saw someone tweet about it. I think it was Kyle. I couldn't pronounce his last name. And their concept, I couldn't listen to the full video, but I saw the tweet, was essentially asking the question that something changed with the 49ers between 2012 and 2014. Because the tweet essentially pointed out that prior to 2012, the 49ers were the healthiest team in the NFL. And then ever since 2014, they've not been the healthiest team in the NFL. I couldn't watch the video for why the reason was. I hope it's not the substation because then I got completely jazzed by a headline. But yeah, this tweet kind of blew me away, Rob.
Yeah, Ryan Paganetti, who used to work for the Philadelphia Eagles, had the tweet. According to Aaron Schatz, adjusted games lost, the Niners were the sixth healthiest in 08, ninth in 09, fourth in 10, eighth healthiest in 11, and the healthiest team in 2012. And then since then, starting in 2013, which predates Kyle Shanahan, of course, they have been top 10 most injured every year except one, which was 2023 when they were the fourth healthiest team. No coincidence. That's the year they went to the Super Bowl. Look, it's frustrating. A lot of you are frustrated. I see the comments in the chat. Chris Waddell says, sorry for the rant, but I'm not longer. This is bad luck football crowd. At this point, it's either how they warm up, stretch, or how they practice, or that crazy substation. This might get them fired. I was trying to be positive today, Vish, and thank you, Chris, for the super chat. Because the 49ers have never really been able to kind of do things as planned, right? And I know most teams don't get to, but like, for instance, it was supposed to be Pearsall and Brandon Ayuk, right? That was the plan. That didn't work out. This year was supposed to be Mike Evans and Ricky Pearsall, right? That didn't work out. They never seem to get to execute the plan that they come up with, but they are also very good at adapting on the fly. They're very good at figuring out ways to get around it, right? We got Debo Samuel wide back because they had so many injuries at running back they had to figure something out. So they put him at wide back, and then ended up being a fantastic maneuver and led to one of the most brilliant single NFL seasons we've ever had. You know, they incorporated the dash motion into the offense this year. They're going to have to get creative, but they're also good at getting creative.
Yeah, I'm not for that positivity either, Rob. I'm with Chris Waddell. Like, I don't want them to have to be creative at a certain point, because them being creative is a total credit to them. It's a total credit to Shanahan. It's a credit to their culture, the next man up, the way guys rehab. Fine, positive to the 49ers. The way guys go down in a practice, there's something going on. And I'm with Chris Waddell, where it's become like every practice we get three new guys. And it's the kinds of injuries that we were told are about how people prepare. And you bring up the Ricky Pearsall thing. Ricky Pearsall never got hurt in college.
Ricky Pearsall
was a completely healthy player. And then, okay, he got shot his first year. But this PCL thing, in a way, it's bad luck. But in a way, I also feel like part of why everybody was convinced they were going to take a receiver really early in the draft was maybe they knew there was something with Ricky Pearsall's knee. And you know what the worst part about this is? Two things, Rob. One, I see the criticism of Ricky Pearsall. I actually feel terrible. There's probably no one that's more gutted about this whole situation than Ricky Pearsall. This probably absolutely sucks if you're him. And then the second part of it is the way people are writing about this PCL injury. I'm no doctor. I'm no medical expert. It doesn't seem to be as routine as the ACL recovery or the MCL recovery. They seem to write about this one the way they write about the patella, where it's, I'm not sure how guys will recover and whether they'll get back to full strength. So now you're taking a first round pick and an elite asset. He was already hampered because you were never sure if his knee was in good shape after what went on last year. People are talking about how they handled it. I'm not necessarily sure from a medical standpoint, because of how the injury has been written about by the medical experts, saying the surgery itself is a risk. So perhaps that's why they didn't want to go that route. It's so unfortunate. And he's one of just many that are just example after example like this. Like, Mike Evans is a healthy player, Rob. The hamstring thing to me is overblown when you look at the entirety of his career. He's been a healthy player. He shows up in shape to camp. He's not getting a quad strain in Bucks camp every year. It rarely happens. This isn't Debo. I'm without putting anyone down. That's the distinction I'm trying to draw, where a Debo pulls a quad or pulls a hamstring. Sometimes it's in to do with the kind of shape that they show up in.
Mm-hmm. And look, we don't know. They're saying it's a minor thing with Mike Evans, and maybe it is. And maybe they're trying to be extra cautious because they've had all the injury issues, right? Dazon Stribling was looking amazing, and then all of a sudden he's been out of practice the last couple practices, and maybe they're like, yeah, we don't think it's anything, but we are so afraid basically of it becoming something that they are being extra cautious, but it's so frustrating because it was immediate, right? Like, it happened before the pads even came on. They had guys that were coming out. So that is the frustrating thing. But I am trying to put a positive spin on it, Vish. I'm going to say that whoever we do ultimately end up with out there, Shanahan's going to find a way to get it done.
Perhaps. I think that there's some years that it's easier to do that than others. Last year, there was a good example where the schedule and other factors also allowed the 49ers to go through the injuries they did. This year, the league itself might not be so forgiving to them. I'm getting really frustrated by this, Rob. And it's frustrating in a way that, like, I can't even do anything other than be frustrated, because none of us can point to why or what or what's happening. But it can't be at this rate for every practice. And I understand a lot of these are quote-unquote minor injuries, but the fact that these guys are being stopped from being practicing altogether is a problem to me. There's a difference between resting a guy and then saying, oh, it's nothing, but he has a quad injury, so he's not going to practice today. Especially when you talk about how important practice is.
That's so weird that I don't hear it. Let me know in the chat if it's echoing, because I apologize for that since I can't hear it. Chris Waddell says, what year did they leave downtown? Well, remember, just for the record, they have been practicing in Santa Clara since 1980. The substation has been present since 1988. Then it was expanded in 2014. So that's your substation upgrade. And Chris Waddell sends 440 joules. I don't know what the joule thing is. I'm not going to lie, but thank you. Appreciate it. I don't know if you know what that is, Vish. Do you know what the joule thing is on YouTube?
No. Honestly, no.
Neither do I.
Oh, gosh. Rob, let me try rejoining.
Okay. Alex Ann says, this is the curse of Candlestick or Levi's. It was built on a cemetery. I know I'm reaching, but I can't with this BS anymore. And I think that one of the things is, and apparently jewels are a digital YouTube currency. Thank you. It depends on how many of these are serious, how many will actually keep players out of games. And I do agree that, like, yeah, it's a bummer that they're not getting the chemistry in training camp. I 100% agree. That sucks. But ultimately, it matters how many of these affect actual games. Obviously, Ricky Pearsall will know that. How many of the others will? Will Stribling? Will Mike Evans? Will Jordan James or Kalen Black, who's now been out? How many of these injuries affect actual games, Vish? Because right now, obviously, Pearsall is one, but hopefully they'll still be able to be back on the field week one in Australia.
More 49ers Gold Standard podcast after this.
Yeah, I don't think it's that sort of situation at this point because we haven't seen, knock on wood, anything to the Trent Williams, the Christian McCaffreys, the Fred Warners, the Nick Bosas, the guys who we're really relying upon as the biggest key contributors next year for the 49ers. It's more the player development side of it, right? Like, you take a guy like Stribling. The talks about how he looked the first couple of days of training camp were really, really positive. Now, that doesn't always mean everything. You have to hope the momentum continues because training camp itself can be long and drawn out and guys can come in fresh and look real good the first week and then they might be worn out and not the same for the next 3 weeks. But things were looking at a positive sign where it was like, I want to see this guy practice more and I want to see him practice more and see how it goes the more and more he practices. And all of a sudden, he has a setback that doesn't give him the opportunity to practice. Same sort of thing with a Kalen Black, where things were positive in the early reviews. There was a sign that he's explosive. He's kind of muscled up. There's like just good signs about how the guy, the player, the approach, everything looks, and he gets banged up. Romello Hite, similar sort of situation. He's impressive. He's getting the defense. He understands what we're doing, and he's banged up from getting those reps. Okay, like the Niners we've talked about it, added a lot more depth to their roster that maybe a lot of these guys are competing for spots and they won't be fully relied upon or put into situations where they need to play next year. But they're more talented than some of the veteran guys that they've brought in. And it certainly behooves the Niners, worst case scenario, these guys practice a lot this offseason. And that's a good thing because you just don't practice a lot as a football team in general with the way NFL rules are laid out. And so it's hard to not keep harping on the injuries, but that's the secondary part of the frustration where it's like we can be positive on the area that, okay, the Niners haven't suffered anything that we look at a guy other than Ricky Pearsall as being a real long-term loss, something that we have to think about in the season. They're not going to have him. They need to plan around it. But they're also losing opportunities. This is where your young guys get better. This is their opportunity to compete. And the more guys you have in your 90 available, the more better reps you have in practice. I don't want another year of, hey, we needed to sign people just so we can have enough people to get three strings of reps. Because the healthy positions get screwed from reps then too.
That's the scary part. It's like literally they're playing guys out of position to finish practices. Like Kevin Givens is lining up defensive end. Now, good news, Romello Hite was back at practice today, so that's good. CJ West was back at practice today, so that's good. I mean, the Romello Hite reviews, if we want to talk about something positive, man, the Romello Hite reviews. Nobody thinks he's going to be, you know, an every down player or anything like that, but the thing that I love is right away it was like, oh, okay, that guy's got something. And when you really have a guy that has a special ability, whatever it is, it pops right away. You don't need to watch six practices. This isn't like with Mykal Williams where it's like, well, if you really watch the film and break it down, he's actually a great run. If it's like, nope, I see it right away. I walked in, there it is. The Niners have not gotten that out of their draft classes. And so hopefully, at least for Romello Hite, it's like this guy, because he was brought in to do one thing, Vish, rush the quarterback. Yeah. So The fact that we're getting early reports like that it might be there is super encouraging.
I totally agree with you. And I think your point about a guy being good early and it being obvious to the reporters, it just pops. Everybody notices it. The way the guy carries himself, he just feels like he knows what he's doing. I wish you didn't take that gratuitous shot at my guy, Michael, because I do think Michael Williams had one thing going for him right off the bat, the size. Lived up to the billing, and we always talk about it. Chris Sims, size is a skill, and having a big team makes a difference. Ask Seattle. They were so big last year.
And Michael Williams, good news, hasn't shrunk despite the ACL surgery. He's still a big guy. And
I'm sure he got bigger, actually. He's just 21.
And he looks like that, you know, he's been doing some good work and is progressing along nicely, which is good to see. Alfred Collins is coming along. And, oh, were you going to say something?
No, I was just going to nod along with you. And I agree with you. And he's got the kind of body that look at Eric Armstead. It's like you can talk about impact, all of those things. He can play 13 years in the NFL. That's the kind of size and impact he can make in the run game.
It sounds like, and again, this is not a linear thing, but it sounds like Kyle Shanahan is clearly pushing himself to try and get back. He's been out there at practice. He's been staying for longer and longer. This is where we are. We're tracking how long the head coach is at practice. He's going over to the speaker, which I think is really interesting, and spending time there. You could tell he's really kind of testing himself and testing his limits to try and get back from the concussion. But, you know, we don't get a lot of news, but the news we are getting, it sounds pretty good.
Yeah, 100%. And I have to say, I said it on the last show, it isn't, some people I think get a little snarky with it, but I do think it's impressive how the Niners practices have quote unquote ran smoothly, where it doesn't feel like there's been anything disastrous on either side of the ball with Shanahan out. And I don't want to put so much importance to Shanahan, because all of these people are adults. They've been in the NFL for a long time. They know how to do their jobs. But it's hard sometimes to deal with, hey, our head coach is not going to be out there and we have to go through business as usual. And the 49ers have been business as usual. So I'm with you. The thing with Shanahan that I'm more interested about is everybody says that the recovery is like non-linear. Like that's the description they're using for it. And so I wonder how it reacts as he starts getting better. That makes sense, because he's clearly getting better, but does that mean he's better back to normal, or does that mean he's better and he suddenly has to maybe deal with this at certain times or certain points? I'm assuming it's going to be the latter, and I want to know how he's able to deal with that recovery going through the offseason. Then preseason will be its own test. And the fact that they play in Australia, I didn't want to put too much to it, because I was taking the other perspective of like maybe the Niners thought Shanahan would recover. That's why they didn't put the news out. So then maybe this concussion isn't so bad, but then it got worse. I don't know. It's like too many variables to weigh. But I've heard enough people from the Mayokos, the Albert Breers, simply just speculate that, yeah, it's a real concern because of the flight, the time difference, all of these things with the recovery. And so when you add that variable in as well, him getting progressively better and what setbacks come with that are going to be really, really important to monitor.
That's a good point. He may have been looking like, hey, he was great. I mean, Chris Sims said like it took Kyle a couple of days to realize that things weren't quite right. And, you know, they don't have practice tomorrow. Kyle was out there for the most amount of time today that he's been out there. And so I do think part of this test is, how does Kyle feel tomorrow? Does he feel run down? Does he feel tired? Does he have a headache? And, you know, what does he do? How does he bounce back from that and deal with that? It's all stuff that we're going to find out as we go along. Alex Sand, thank you for the super chat, says, I would love to see data on soft tissue injuries versus concussions, because concussions have really come down from their all-time high in the early 2000s. Maybe the NFL can do more to lower these injuries. I mean, I'm sure they're trying to do everything they can, stretching, hydration, sleep, all that stuff. I know some people think they should start the practices later in the day because your body temperature is higher later in the day. I don't know. There's all sorts of theories, but that's the $10 billion question, Alex, because it seems like the soft tissue stuff is what's been, you know, the bugaboo for the Niners in the past few years.
Yeah, I mean, like just a random thought I have reading this, I would preface by saying it's more like an observation and anecdotal than it is something that I can back with data. I feel like athletes today do a lot more like sprint work, a lot of explosive work to be super explosive on a given player, a given route, and be able to explode. And maybe that in turn, because NFL games are expecting you to be explosive, but you have to be explosive for 60 minutes in a really, really grueling way, it is just making them get hurt more because they're trying to maximize their ability to explode. Whereas maybe athletes of the past were not as springy, as twitchy, mm-hmm. but more, I guess, built for the long-term endurance of the NFL. And I only say this because, like, I don't know, if you bring up Jerry Rice's training, right, and you correlate his longevity. Brady, for example, it did feel like he was ahead of his time doing some plyometric flexibility, all of these things. He at least was doing something different. Jerry Rice, it felt like it was just his will, right? Like, he's running up hills a lot, and that's how he's building his cardio, his wind, his mind, but also he's running uphill a lot on concrete and grass, which is can't be very good for his legs and knees and being explosive and twitchy. I don't know. And so he played 20 years, never missing anything, not really dealing with a hamstring or a quad. And again, fully anecdotal, maybe somebody actually knows this topic a little bit better. Rob, does that give you any thoughts? But that's where my mind went immediately, because I also would like to see that data.
There are always outliers, right? Like, everyone, you know, the substation people, the people that buy into that, you know, have talked about, they think that the Niners need to move everything. And my response is always, well, how did Fred Warner never miss any time until last year, ever? If the substation is that powerful, how was he able to avoid it? How were the Niners as a team able to avoid it in 2023, if it is, in fact, that powerful? But there are always weird outliers. Jerry Rice is one. Rod Woodson also recovered from a torn ACL in the same season like Jerry Rice did. Like, some dudes are just freaks, I guess.
Right. And Rice played like 5 more years on that knee after, 7 more years on that knee after the...
Yeah, he played way more because he was in the knee with the 49ers. And then he went to the Raiders and then the Seahawks.
Yeah. And so, like, I do think there's something to it, Rob, because I am perusing, and I saw when Garrett got hurt, some Niners fans immediately tweeted substation, and I thought that was funny and all of that, but I don't see it at this frequency, Rob. It's every practice with this team.
Yeah,
and everybody is like, okay, it's not always Fred Warner, to your point, but like, over time, it's enough people that get hurt in a practice that I find it hard not to question it anymore. I find it hard not to question it anymore, Rob. It can't just be something we pretend like the Niners just have bad luck and we do this every offseason, every practice, and it's like 5 people got, you know, this, that, quad, right, hamstring.
There is not a practice that goes by where they don't lose somebody. It's every practice, which is why
it's always introduced us to the same way. And this is the worst part, right? Because I don't want to preemptively do this to the Niners' injuries. I'm hoping they really are as benign as they say they are. But this is how it always gets introduced. Like, so-and-so, we feel like so-and-so has a good practice the day before. The next day before practice, we find out, hey, he's not practicing. He has quad strain day to day. It's not going to be that bad. And then he doesn't practice the next 5 days. And then we're like, what's going on? And it's like, oh, quad strain week to week, but he'll be good for the season. Like, we've seen this scenario play out in succession with this football team. Mm-hmm. We've seen it as a pattern. Now, I can't give you the reason for that pattern, but you and I are a lived experience of having to talk about that player after player after player.
Chris Waddell says, that's a good point, Vish. The human body isn't designed to be this big. The tendons can't handle it. Same reason bodybuilders are always soft-tissued. Well, they're sort of training their body for a different thing, but we've got more.
I think his point of, like, you're building a Ferrari with all these NFL players where they're basically optimizing strength and explosion in like one human at both limits. I see where he's going. Maybe that's just an extreme for all of them.
It took 25 minutes, but we finally got our first comment about your background. Bo Adams, thank you for a generous super chat, donating to get you some 49ers posters, Fish. So there you go. You get the super chat. We got to get something up on those walls.
Bo, what do you want up there? Come on. You gotta tell me. Whatever Bo Adams wants will be on that wall. But he's gotta let me know. And okay. It can't be Jim Harbaugh. You got to give me something I would like to play, work with me, Bo.
Bo, how about Dante Pettis and let's see, Devondre Campbell, and who else can we throw up on that wall behind Vish? Let's see if we can get back to
Rob,
that.
Rob, you think they're selling merch of Devondre Campbell and Dante Pettis to go on a wall?
I don't know. I will say this, though. It does feel, and what do you think? Let me ask you this question. It feels to me like there is more attention on the 49ers injuries than there has been in the past. It's not just a 49er thing anymore. I feel like the national perspective is, oh my God, the 49ers are injured again. And I do wonder if that kind of focus, attention, and criticism might cause the 49ers to do more than just say, well, injuries happen in football.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. You know, like a couple years ago, I felt like injuries were a thing we as 49ers fans were screaming into the sky, and other teams were like, yeah, cry about it. Every team gets hurt. You guys don't get hurt more specifically than other teams. Mm-hmm. And I think it's gotten to a point over the last 3 years where enough people through fantasy football or through betting have been watching this team, and they're like, wait, every good player on this team seemingly gets hurt. Like, what is going on with this team where, yeah, I do see a focus, and I do see it talked about where accounts that I are not associated with the 49ers like, ah, here we go again. And I'm like, I'm supposed to be saying that. I watched this team deal with this year after year, you know, for the last 20 years. But I do totally agree with you. Like, it's come out of nowhere. Whether the attention changes anything with the Niners, I don't know, Rob. I feel like the injuries themselves are the thing that should have caused the Niners to question whether change is needed. And unfortunately, I'm nowhere near educated on the topic to give any scientific reason or any logic about this is what you're doing. That's why the injuries are happening. So it's just like, I'm pitchforked to the sky. Please don't happen. Why do these injuries keep happening? Like, that's all we can keep doing. But I don't see this consistently. I follow the other team's camps. Sure, players get injured. It's the NFL. Everybody deals with injuries. Not at this rate. No. It's not happening at this rate. And it's not draft picks like Ricky Pearsall, who's picked in the first round, never was injured. Like, what kind of luck is this? What kind of luck is this? The guy was never injured. He barely played to show his talent as a 49er. And when he played, he looked good.
To hear Lynch talk about how gutted Pearsall was, I mean, literally, this guy got shot and from the hospital room was like, I can play week one against the Jets. Like, you know, I'm sure he himself was just devastated. It was as frustrated as we all were.
I can imagine the frustration for him, Rob, and I can imagine the disappointment, contract year, all of these things. I can imagine all of those things, but I'm talking about from a fan perspective, right? Like, the Rams draft Jared Verse. He's a mostly healthy guy. They don't deal with this sort of situation, and knock on wood, great for Jared Verse, but like, what kind of luck is this? This is a first-round pick. He never gets hurt. And last year, he deals with this PCL up and down. I don't know. I thought he was going to have a killer offseason. I didn't realize his knee never fully recovered. A day into camp, he's like, oh, he's shut down. His knee is not doing good. And now he's getting surgery. And you read about the surgery, and it's like, oh, he might not recover. They used a first-round pick on this guy, and he looked like a real talent.
Yeah, that's the part. It's like, it's hard enough for them to find real talent when they make the first round picks, and then for this to go that way where it looks like they finally got one, and he just constant stops and starts, and now his 49ers career, they're not going to pick up the option on him next
year.
$17 million. You can't do that.
They can't even be committed to him anymore.
No, it's sad. Yeah, you're right. You can't depend on him. Unfortunately, Chris Waddell says, Vish, get a business P.O. box and we'll send you stuff to hang on the wall. Stats should send you some merch. I have sent Vish some merch.
Yeah.
He never wears it.
What? I feel like I've worn it on two or three different Mondays. Now, next Monday, I will leave it on my chair just to put it on right before the show.
Well, there you go.
Field goals are failures, Robert.
More 49ers Gold Standard podcast after this.
One of the big changes they've made, Vish, is the return of Debo. 19 is back. He's officially 19. Sorry, Jacob Cowing, we're giving you number 6, which, in case you haven't noticed, is Malik Mustafa's number. So you're probably not going to be around, Jacob Cowing. But Debo is back, Vish. What did you think of the move? Do you think it will work? What were your thoughts?
Yeah, dude, love Deebo Samuel, right? Like for the longest time, he was my favorite player in the NFL. I love how he plays. He's just a guy with a cool nickname now. It's not it's not a difference-making signing. And I understand his body looked the way they promised his body was going to look last year. And then when they showed pictures of him, we weren't really sure it looked that way. But I just think the way his style was and how he played that style, like he can never come back to being that guy. No. Because I think there was a level of motivation of not being paid to put yourself out on the field and just put your body at a level of recklessness that's like unimaginable. And that's who Deebo was. Like, you don't get the nickname Deebo without being the biggest bully on the field. And then there was just a level of athleticism when he was younger that was just natural. God gifted him with it. And when he used it and he could just accelerate or turn a corner, like it was a different type of acceleration. It was a different type of acceleration from other professional athletes on an NFL field. Like the touchdown run he has in the playoff game versus Dallas, look at the way he hits the corner. Look at the linebacker, the angle he has. He outruns the angle, no problem, to the edge. Like not many guys have that sort of speed. He's lost those things. I think from an impact standpoint, like maybe he brings a positive attitude to the 49ers, like in terms of like an uplifting attitude. But honestly, I never felt like his field attitude and energy was that uplifting to his teammates in terms of the things he did without having the ball. The thing with Deebo is Debo's only a good football player with the ball in his hands. And that's problematic when you're saying the 49ers aren't going to feature Deebo anymore. What does Deebo do well without the ball in his hands? What does Deebo do well to help other players be better today? 5 years ago, the fear of Deebo having the ball in his hands made other people better. What do you think, Rob?
Well, that's what I want to talk to you about, because you mentioned the attitude, right? And it's interesting because everybody, when they talk about Deebo, talks about the energy, the attitude, that whole thing. And there were so many times where we saw it because of who he is, his athleticism, his incredible contact balance and tackle breaking, he would give this team a jolt. And on the other side of the ball, Dre Greenlaw was that guy for the 49ers. And I thought that, I think it was Lenore who said, we got our bully back with Dre Greenlaw. Those were the two guys that brought it for the 49ers. They were the epitome of the physicality that this team had. My question to you is, they're obviously not the same players they were. If that is true, can they still be those bullies? Can they still bring that? Will they have that effect?
So Greenlaw, I'm with you. Deebo, I used to think of it that way too, but last year I felt like they were just as physical, and guys like Kittle and Jennings really set the tone for what that physicality looks like. I know what you mean in terms of there's nothing more exciting or uplifting when you watch Deebo do some of the things he does, because it almost feels like you're watching the star in high school. Like when Deebo really makes his big plays with the ball in his hands, it's like you're watching a high school game with that one five-star that everybody's here to see against everybody else. And he's returning kicks. He's taking the ball in a direct snap as quarterback. They hand it to him. They throw it to him. He just does everything and scores. That's who Deebo was in the NFL. at his best. And so like that's uplifting in its own way. But honestly, Rob, I think the physicality on this offense, I don't think they need Deebo to instill it. I think Greenlaw brings something different to their defense because he's out of control. And I mean that in a good way, but he's out of control. Deebo is in control. Deebo's not doing anything outside of the realms to really aggravate the other team or do something. I mean, the thing with Greenlaw is we're going to have to just say that there will be at least 3 to 4 unsportsmanlike conduct penalties on the 49ers or personal fouls on the 49ers on 57 coming into next year. With Deebo, there's not going to be much of that. And in fact, what I saw in 2024, even though he was still like a fine player, he just wasn't Deebo. He was like, okay, he's just another guy with the cool nickname. He was getting hit too. People didn't hit Deebo the way they did it in 2024 in those other years. Like nobody ever got a clean shot and put Deebo on his back. And people were shooting these screens like they knew that's where the ball was going, and they knew he wasn't going to make them miss or do anything about it. And they were hitting him. So I don't know. Maybe the walk out of the tunnel looks way cooler because Debo's got sick swag and he is really hyped up when he comes out with those songs. And I'm not going to lie, it's way cooler with Debo. Debo's so cool. But
do you think
what was he dealing with last year is the same Debo?
Well, I went back and watched a lot of the Washington film last year, and that was the one thing I saw. And that was exactly the thing I wrote down is he took a couple of shots where he got blasted, and that just did not happen to Debo Samuel. And that's not like it happens to almost everybody. It just shows you where he once was. The question is, what will Kyle Shanahan do with him? Is Kyle going to go and do the same old Debo game plans, or is he going to actually recognize that, you know, players age and people are not the same guy, or is he just going to fall back into old habits?
So I think this is going to be an answer people don't like. I don't think it's going to be purposeful in the sense that like Shanahan is falling into old habits by calling plays for Debo a certain way. But look, they've paid Debo $7 million. Debo's going to make this team.
No, they haven't paid $7
million. Or up to $7 million, right? We'll see what the guarantee comes out to be. But right now, I'm in this assumption that there's a level of guarantee that Debo is going to make this team. The problem is if Debo makes your team, and this is why he wasn't signed until August or late July, what role does he play if he doesn't do that? Okay, he returns kicks. He won't play special teams, right? He's not going to play punt protection, kick protection. He's not going to be a gunner. Okay, he returns the kicks for you. I'm not sure you have him return punts. And then on offense, what role is he? Is he going to line up on the X? No, because there's certain routes that nobody's going to be scared of Debo. Is he going to be your flanker the whole game and play Z? Probably not. Not. That's why the 49ers got rid of him in 2024. I don't think they brought him back to do that role. Is he going to play in the slot for the 49ers? Maybe, but I think they'll want Mike Evans in the slot depending on matchup. So like, what role does he play, right? Like what role does he play on this offense and how does it complement other people? The role he plays is using him as the offensive weapon. So every time he's on the field, that's the only role you're going to play, use him. It just depends how many times he's on the field. But if he plays 50% of snaps, you're going to feel like Kyle is doing the Debo thing for the entire 50% of the snaps because there's only one way to use Debo now.
404 error page not found has a good point. Says if depends on Stribling and Evans are available, he should be the third target, but get a few looks under, he can't be the one. And that's a good point, right? If Evans is back, which again, everybody seems to think he will be, and if Stribling can be what they hope he can be, yeah, he'll be the third target. But if those guys are hurt or any of that, it's going to be Debo is the number one guy.
He's not going to be the third target the conventional way you're going to see a third target where it's going to be three wide receivers, right? And two are on the outside. One is going to line up on the slot. He's going to be the third target in the sense that when they go 21 personnel or they have their five eligibles, he's the guy that keeps moving between receiver, running back, goes in motion. Because the way they're going to get him the ball is still going to be screens. The way they're going to get him the ball is still going to be jet sweeps. The way they're going to get him the ball is still toss it 1 yard in front of him for a completion. Like, this is the way he's still going to get the ball. This is how Washington used him all of last year. It wasn't a difference in how they used Debo Samuel. He didn't go to Washington and all of a sudden they lined him up on the outside and he couldn't do that. Washington did all the same things that the 49ers did with him because he's become this sort of player. In his prime, he was not this sort of player. In his prime, he was capable of doing everything, and that's what made him so scary when you put him in these positions. Now, he's become a player only capable of being used in these spots. And to be fair, for the 49ers, they didn't have a guy who they could run a jet sweep with last year, and it was a real issue. We would talk about weeks after weeks, where's the jet sweep? Where's the jet sweep? They can run one with Stribling now. They can run one with Debo. So there's elements where this offense, where he comes into play, and they're going to have him. But when you say like, oh, what does he do that's outside of what Debo does? No. All what Debo does is jet sweeps, tunnel screens, bubble screens. Like, he's going to still be the third and long guy. That's his role. And that's where when you talk about a receiving core and you go down the list and you say, we're going to keep five of them and how do they complement each other's skill set? You have to get four other guys who do every other thing for your team because he doesn't service your team in any other way. He doesn't play special teams. That's what I would want this preseason. Put him out there in punt coverage. Put him out there in kickoff return because he's going to have to help your team in some other way than just do the Debo stuff. because the Deebo stuff doesn't give you enough anymore. If the Deebo stuff gives you 10 touchdowns the way it used to, you live with it. But you can't do 50% of your plays for him to tunnel screens, jet sweeps.
Are we going to get like fake screen to Deebo? Is the gravity that Deebo has now, it's just going to be, everyone knows we're going to throw it to him short. So we're going to pretend like we're going to throw it to him short and then throw it to somebody else.
That will be his gravity, right? And like the Niners need that role. Like they need that role. I think I'm more pointing at your question in terms of like, will they use him any different? I guess without, and I might have gone a little farther, but like, he doesn't bring something to use him different. Like there this is no kind of how you have to use him if you want him to help your team. And that's how Washington tried using him too. And it's kind of a big role to give someone who doesn't do all the other things you would give of a guy who's a third receiver, right? Like your third receiver, you would want to service you in special teams and in other areas of your team than just being a solely offensive weapon type.
We are going to get, mark my words, it's August 3rd. We are going to get a Deebo pass this year. They're going to do like the end around, like they did against the Rams where he threw it to Jennings, because they're going to use him like that and everybody's going to be expecting it. And then he will throw it. I don't know who's going to catch it. It might be CMC, but I guarantee we'll see a Deebo pass this year.
Yeah. I'm interested to see what like the overall, I agree with you. We're going to see a Deebo. We're going to see the whole trick package is going to go through Deebo.
Yeah,
when Debo's on the field, you're going to be thinking there's going to be some sort of misdirection, some sort of trick, some sort of thing. I just don't know how much of the offense that's going to be, how that manifests. And Rob, I guess like conventionally, I don't feel like last 2 years he's done all like the fundamental things in your base offense that aren't the special package stuff well enough for you to feel comfortable with him as just a normal wide receiver in your offense. He's lost a lot of his effectiveness in your general offensive efficiency, which used to not be the case. Like in his prime, he was pretty freaking good within your offense, just running routes and playing receiver too.
More 49ers Gold Standard podcast after this. Now, without further commercial interruption, the conclusion of this episode of the 49ers Gold Standard podcast.
One more thing I want to get to on today's show. I feel like this is a Robin Vish topic, and that is the departure of the oft-criticized, oft-hated Parag Marate, who officially leaves the organization after 25 years. He's going to go do some soccer stuff. He will not be involved with the 49ers. There was some, you know, I don't want to say turnover. What's the transition? Because Brian Hampton had been handling a lot of the contract negotiations as more and more of Parag's stuff became the soccer stuff. But now it is official. He is gone. Brian Hampton is the chief negotiator, Vish. We have seen a lot of Parag Marate over the years. What was your reaction when you saw the news?
I mean, like, I don't know. Because honestly, I never saw like Parag is tied to the 49ers as much as I saw him as like the guy who protects the York's finances.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I felt like that was a completely different interest in his job. And I felt like he's still kind of maintaining that role just from like an overseeing of a different asset for the York's. And so I don't know what really changes here, because if he's doing what he's doing to protect the York's financial assets, I'm assuming anything tied to Parag Marate isn't really Parag Marate doing like what he wants to do as much as he's doing what his best directive is in terms of protecting his boss's finances. And so I'm assuming that the next guy that does the job is likely going to take the role and do it similarly. So that's where I found it hard to put Parag behind those things. In terms of like the job he actually did, I thought it got a little overrated over time. Originally, the way the 49ers structured contracts with Parag was a little bit revolutionary. They stayed out of a lot of cap trouble early on, especially at a time where teams were still handing out bad contracts in the late 2010s, in the late 2000s, early 2010s, and so on. Now, every team is fantastic in terms of how they manage cap, how they manage contracts. And in fact, I would say I've seen some more financially interesting strategies from teams that have made the 49ers look a little bit antiquated in terms of how much money they spend and how much money they choose to save. And so I'd be interested to see if there's like a different voice that comes in. But honestly, like at this point, I think the guy that does the numbers just does the numbers in the way that the owner wants his finances managed. I don't see this person as a heavy impact on football. And I see the contractual negotiation issues as going a step above Parag. Because at the end of the day, Parag isn't negotiating with Parag's money. So, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I do think making the York's money was his primary function. You know, he famous, what did he, I'm trying to find the quote while you were talking, but he famously said he, you know, turned the 49ers into a world-class organization. I forget what analogy he used, but he took a lot of crap for all the contract issues that they had with Trent Williams, who almost left, and George Kittle and Debo Samuel and all the guys. A lot of it was blamed on Parag. And now later in his tenure, a lot of times what would happen was they would negotiate with the 49ers with like Brian Hampton and they'd get to a decent spot. And then it was like, all right, where are we on this? And then all of a sudden, they would have to inform Parag of what was going on, and Parag would be like, no, that's not how any of this works. And then it was like back to square one with negotiations. That's a terrible way to run things, obviously. That won't be the case now. It's going to be Brian Hampton. Also, as sort of an aside, Kwesi Adofo-Mensah is going to be handling some stuff. They didn't really say what. And ever since he got hired, ever since Dieter came on the show and sort of broke that news with me when he was talking with me about how Niners are considering bringing somebody in, and it was Kwesi. I feel like he has just been getting more and more stuff thrown on his plate, Vish.
And that's more of the analytics side GM, right? Like, that's the guy who comes from the perspective that you envision Parag to be, but that's not really who Parag was, because Parag wasn't like a football analytics background. He's a finance guy. He just understood numbers. I think he's actually a data grad from Berkeley. He's got some impressive degrees. But anyway, that aside, I do think like sometimes we make more of these things ultimately than they are, Rob, because I don't think the 49ers ran a certain way because Parag Marate wanted them to run a certain way. I think Parag Marate kept a job for 25 years in high standing because he probably was the doer of the will of the people with the actual.
But here's
money.
Here's the thing, Vish. It's one thing with finances. It's another thing to tell somebody during negotiations, we think you're going to age like crap. We don't trust you, which is essentially what they told Debo Samuel. We know that. I mean, look, consider the source, but Brandon Ayuk flat out, what did he say to Jaden Daniels? They don't want me. Like, we know the 49ers negotiating got nasty at times. A lot of guys brush that off. You can do a contract and you can be a stickler for money without getting to that point.
But he doesn't last 25 years if someone had a problem with him getting to that place. And that's why I don't see now you're transitioning him off because you had an issue with how he did any of these things.
No, that's not why they're transitioning
and
him.
And so my guess is you probably want the next guy to do a lot of what he did. And that's really what I'm saying.
And I'm saying there's more than one path to the same destination. Yeah,
perhaps.
They want the contract.
But I don't think that the path that the 49ers choose was like Parag Marate was the dictator who said, no, we will negotiate this way. I will not pay Debo. It's not even his money.
Right. But I'm just saying maybe, possibly, it won't get quite so nasty in the future. Although the problem the 49ers have now is not that it gets nasty. It's who do they give Jed York's money to, Vish? Who's the guy right now that you're worried about having to pay on a second contract?
That is also true.
Like Dominic Pooney? He's a guard. I'm not worried.
It is. It's a sad state of affairs in a completely different direction. You were hoping Ricky Pearsall would put himself in that sort of position. Yeah.
It's not.
Maybe you got to do the Trent Williams thing again. He's like what? Stafford.
It's yeah, well, I'm sure. Well, he's under contract for two more years, so
right,
that seems to be okay. But like, there is nobody. It's Dominic Pooney. It's maybe Renardo Green, but probably not. I mean, he's literally battling for a starting job now. If he balls out this year, maybe it's different. But like, there isn't any. Jed York's got to be sitting there like, I'm about to save some money because we ain't got anybody to pay.
Kyle Juszczyk.
Yeah, well, you can't have a 49ers team without Kyle Juszczyk, clearly. But I just, I thought it was.
He's asking for it.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah, he is. I just thought it was interesting. Parag had been somebody literally 25 years. Like, that is, guys don't stay with teams for 25 years. And so now we're officially in the Brian Hampton and the Kwesi Adofo-Mensah era. Now the problem is just finding players that they actually need to pay. And that's a whole other question. All right. That's going to do it for this edition of the show. Rob, thank you, everybody.
You had to put us in that direction. Hopefully they'll find them this year, Rob. Come on. Well, positive.
That's where we are. Please like this video. Subscribe to the channel if you haven't done so already. If this is your first time checking us out, thank you. Like I said at the top, this is where we usually go play-by-play, drive-by-drive, and break it all down when they're actually playing games. Also, sign up for our brand-new newsletter. Comes out every Saturday. There's a link in the description. It's just a quick 3-minute, 5-minute read about the week that was and the week to come for the 49ers. It's 100% free. It doesn't cost you anything. So please sign up for that as well so we can be part of your life on Saturdays this year too. Vish, thank you as always, sir. Good to talk to you, and I'll see you in a week.